Welcome back to the penultimate episode of the Defendacast. Penultimate means second to last, because right now our plan is to release one episode discussing the finale and then one discussing the series as a whole.
Fuck that.
one episode it is.
Yeah, we've had editorial direction. It's coming back to
Moe's does the editing. What are you going to do?
I just made an executive decision on that contract.
Yeah. All right. Let this be a lesson to all of you aspiring podcasters. The editor has the final say. I'm Lisa Schmeiser. I'm not the editor. And with me are editor Phil Mozelak and Tony Sindelar. Hi, guys.
Hello.
All right. So
Also, hello.
So let's recap this final episode. We'll talk about it a little bit. We'll make our shameful confessions about the final episode, if we have any. I do. And then we can do kind of a series wrap-up. Does that sound like a plan?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So, Tony, you mentioned you have notes. Therefore, yeah. I nominate you to do the recap.
All right. Do I have someone who's going to time me?
Yeah, let me pull up my timer. I have finally decided the best way to do this is to time you on my phone as opposed to looking at the recording counter. So let me know when you want to get going and we'll start.
Yeah, ready when
the recording counter goes up.
All right.
How are you going to do it?
All right. I'm using a stopwatch this time, so we'll see how that works. All right. Ready, set, begin.
All right. So this is the big finale. It turns out the Hand's plan culminates in Dragonbone excavation. Iron Fist is in the basement of Midland Circle arguing with Elektra and Madame Gao. Everybody else, Luke, Jessica, Matt, Claire, Misty, and Colleen are upstairs planting bombs and causing a ruckus. There's a lot of fight scenes in this episode, some of them big, some of them small, some of them exciting, some of them not so much, and it all kind of culminates in Matt doing a self-sacrifice to save the team and maybe try and reason with Elektra. The building blows up, but life in New York pretty much goes on as is. Matt is mourned, but is he really dead? The end.
38 seconds.
Yeah. I don't think I missed much.
There's one part that you missed, but we'll get to that at a later time that is worth talking about. But it's outside the scope of this nature.
Yeah, and so I've seen this episode a couple times now.
Yeah,
because we keep planning to talk about it, and then things happen, and so I keep rewatching it.
It's been a really long haul.
But I took notes this last time because I was like, "This is it." I don't know how much this episode holds together.
Remember when you would buy like a PC? I never did, but there was a thing on there called bloatware. Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
This reminds me of somewhat of that, like where fight scenes have become total bloatware, where for some reason, and this is basically because of Daredevil, that these fight scenes are, you know, one take loosies, and they move the camera around the scene, and they think if they keep doing that, that is excitement, and that's good. But when you have the lights turned out and you can't even see punches getting thrown, it ends up turning into an Arrow episode. Just saying.
Yeah. No offense to Arrow. Yeah. Offense taken. I don't know. I may be the youngest one here, but my eyes are old. And when there are these episodes, and this is like a complaint I have about Game of Thrones and other shows where like everything takes place in a dark room.
It was so dark, it was really hard to see.
I can't really tell what's going on anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know if millennials have better eyes than I do, but it's just, to me, it's just a bunch of shadows dancing around in a basement.
Sounds like a Walk the Moon video. So it's just, this is a heck of a complaint to have. After a while, like, how many times do you need to see the same fight scenes?
Correct.
And there was a bit of repetitiveness to it. And for me, one of the biggest weaknesses in this episode is it's just a whole lot of denouement. They've literally blown up a building and buried a boatload of dragon bones and closed the gate to Kunlun again. But we spend a whole lot of time on people being sad or people being drunk, which, fine, Jessica, or,
status quo, or
like hanging out in a church and talking in hushed tones about Matt Murdock or whatever. And I sort of feel like with a really good editor, you could have done all of that in about half of the time and it would have landed with more impact, because with the leisurely pace that they set, they did two things that were wrong. One, we noticed what was missing a whole lot more than what was resolved. And two, We also notice there's basically no setup or any clue as to where these characters are going to go for their next bounce back into their individual series. And to me, that was one of the biggest disappointments about this finale, is there's a game-changing event that happens. And at this point, if you're listening to the Defendo cast, spoilers for a show that dropped in late August and has been around for months now. You know, Matt Murdock is presumed dead. We all know he's not. But, I mean, fine. We now know what's going to happen in Daredevil Season 3. But it would have been nice to have a clue as to where Jessica's going to end up for Season 2 of Jessica Jones. It would have been nice to see if Danny Rand is going to start taking over as the cute little devil of Hell's Kitchen. You know, tiny little horns spouting from his hair. Or if he and Luke, like, form a friendship. There's a sense of, oh, well, we had this teamwork adventure. It was fun. And now superhero summer camp is over and back we go to our lives. But the whole point to this was it took characters from four disparate series, threw them in a blender, let them have an adventure. You're going to spin them back out again, and we have no idea where they're going to go or why we should bother. It doesn't make an argument for the Defenders as a series.
No.
Because I don't feel like I don't feel like what happened to the Defenders is going to really affect these guys. You know?
I mean, yeah. they dropped some serious... Well, I shouldn't say even serious. They did drop seeds that, obviously, Jessica and Luke are going to somehow reconnect, that she has a friend in Luke, and so that can somehow blossom. And then, I mean, did I miss something, that Colleen Wing and Danny are an item?
That's set up in Iron Fist.
Okay, good. I missed that.
She takes his V card. It's all very sweet.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's fascinating. Okay, wow. Yeah. Didn't know that.
Yeah, didn't know that. Like, totally, yeah, Netflix first, I'm guessing. But yeah, it's nice that Danny and Colleen are together. I think part of the problem is when you have all these side characters that you toss into the blender with the four leads as well, is everybody's relationship kind of gets short shrift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to the Misty Knight solo series, because now she has her, or will be getting her, bionic arm, which is kind of smooth. I mean, like, there are certain things about this, obviously, that I was excited about. One is the Misty Knight thing getting her arm taken off, because, you know, that was kind of neat. And I didn't like how it happened exactly, because I can't stand that guy. What's his name?
Bakudo?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So you're covered.
Yeah, he's decapitated, so he's out. But, you know, that was exciting. I will tell you that, obviously, I mean, I'm you know, it's on record that Daredevil is my number one. And so it did get me super misty-eyed when Matt was in that scene waking up, and they talked about Margaret or Maggie, who is or may not be his mom. Mm-hmm. That was exciting for me. And also that what they spiced up there was when Karen and Foggy were talking, and everyone knew who Matt, they're going to connect up Matt and Daredevil. You know, that sets up the entire Born Again action, which, you know, that's exciting for a fan. I mean, we're talking deep into the Frank Miller canon, but there's a lot of ways you can really screw that up as well. I mean, it's kind of like, ooh, that's exciting, but I'm very leery that it could get ninja'd up badly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as we've established, the Marvel Netflix universe has a ninja surplus. Mm-hmm. Like, somebody just ordered cases of ninjas.
Did. I mean, are they all dead now? It seemed like the hand is down to like 30 guys at the end, which is kind of underwhelming. I mean, I have to say, I think this episode, it really feels like they kind of ran out of steam. None of the fight scenes were, like, it felt like you needed some big set piece fight scene, and they were like, no, we just have a lot of guys. Like, they have that one shot that's kind of cool where they're like, the camera's spinning in the cave and everyone's doing stuff, and like, that's kind of cool, but there's from an action point of view and from a story point of view, I was left wanting. And even, like, you know, you have kind of the big moment of Matt self-sacrifices and he is dead. But then he's dead for like 8 minutes.
the thing is about that though, it's basically a mirror of what happened at the end of Daredevil season 2 where Elektra sacrifices herself. Mm-hmm. And I just found myself so bored with the scenes between those two because
why are they fighting?
It's more of the same where, oh, you're really bad, Elektra. You're really bad. I'm really bad, Matthew. Don't bother with me. No, no, stay away. Punch, kick, kiss. No, Elektra, you're really good. I can tell you're good. Come here. Punch, kick, kiss. And just, oh my God. Come on, Matthew. Just forget her number. Take her sword thingies and leave. So I'm bored with that will they, won't they drama because it didn't work for however many seasons of Friends of the Ross. They are like the Ross and Rachel of the MCU, and I could not care less. Like, just, they're better off apart. I hate that he was resurrected, if only because that raises the possibility that she is too. You know, if he somehow survived, she's going to be discovered to be behind it somehow.
And she just wasn't a valuable big bat. And I think I said that before, and I don't want to beat a dead horse. But that was my feeling on that. It's just like, you're not – these stakes aren't good enough. And Tony, going back to your recap, I still have no idea what they're mining for with their equipment.
Dragon bones.
Dragon
bones. It was the dragon bones, giant dragon bones. And Madame Gao has this throwaway line where she's like, they used to live in the valley and I would see them frolic. And you're like, oh, okay, yeah, this is where we are now.
They explicitly say, I forget if it's in this episode or the end of the previous episode, mm-hmm. but like they turn the dragon bone into the stuff that keeps them alive.
Yeah.
Right? That's the MacGuffin. And they're out of it.
Yeah. And when they found more bones, they're like, woohoo, we can live longer.
Yeah. Well, so, and here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I've seen this episode a couple times now. I am a little confused what the Hand's plan is. They're mining dragon bones. The excavation to get to the dragon bones was bad for New York and was causing these mini earthquakes. But now they've got the dragon bones and are going to get it all and leave because they're like, don't even worry about Iron Fist. We're just going to get the dragon bones and get out of here. We need this dragon bones as quick as we can. Mm-hmm. Like, are they still a threat to New York? Because there's the whole thing where it's like they blow up a building to stop the Hand when, like, it just feels very anticlimactic because, like, basically almost everybody who's a leader of the Hand gets killed before the building actually blows up.
Yeah.
My
money is on Gao surviving.
Well, she's, like, the last one who, and they even have that weird shot because, like, where we have not seen her in a while.
Yeah.
And she's somehow, like, the one person still wandering around at the base of the elevator.
Yeah.
And she's like, she
says it's now, it's, you know, she was talks
it's coming
to
an end.
Yeah. Brave Fencer Musashi and says it's over. Though I think she will be seen again in something that I'm looking very much forward to.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you think she's going to be in The Punisher?
I have a feeling.
Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about this, because this episode opens with them, with half the Defenders having a debate about blowing up a building.
Oh, jeez, don't even get me started. Which is like, on this.
It's very weird, right? Because it does not feel heroic at all. And like, blowing up a building in New York City, like, I mean, I don't know if it means something in the Marvel universe, but like, it means something in the universe we're in watching this show. And it's just, it's very weird. And I don't even really understand, like, pushing that aside, like, what the point of it is in the context of this episode.
Well, the thing I'm confused about with that, because you're like, well, I don't know if blowing up a building means anything. We established in Daredevil,
mm-hmm.
which
that
they've
been invaded by aliens.
Yes, and that Hell's Kitchen real estate is at a premium, and that's mm-hmm. you know, all, that's basically all of season one is who is going to cash in on the Tony Stark gravy train, right? Mm-hmm. So we've established that New York already has an attitude where it's like, holy carp, aliens blew us up. And, you know, although New Yorkers are tough and they handle terrorist attacks, and I wouldn't say in stride, they know how to roll with terrorist attacks. In the time since there was the alien invasion, like, an entire country was lifted into the air by Tony Stark's psychotic robot force and then disintegrated. And there's been the Civil War and all of this other stuff that's been going on. So at this point, like, the entire globe should be edgy when something blows up. And the fact that that's not even addressed, you have like literally 30 seconds of Trish on her her radio show, all's well that ends well. Oh, gotta go. And
yeah,
like I said, this is another problem with the finale and all of the lingering wrap up stuff they did. Is there are no repercussions? There is literally nobody in there's literally nobody in this TV universe. That's all. Well, we need to see why that happened. Or any, you're telling me that the only four people who found out about the existence of an immortal dragon hoarding cabal and put together the architecture plans and all of the financial stuff and the legwork going back several hundred years, like only four people in the entire world have put it together. Like, Stephen Strange lives a couple blocks away and he can't be arsed to know about dragon bones underground. Like, this literally makes no sense in the context of the larger universe. It would not have been that hard for them to have a throwaway scene with, like, Phil Coulson, where he sniffs around, like, the bar where Jessica Jones is with Luke Cage, and he says something mild and somewhat threatening about how a lot of strange things seem to have happened and the world is full of all sorts of interesting phenomenon. Here's a number in case you guys are interested in discussing why, if you know anything about blunga building up, you know.
Where does Spider-Man Homecoming fall into this? Because it seems like, right? That came out before this and they planned things pretty well.
Yeah,
they don't connect in any way.
Yeah,
so, yeah, because those are theoretically just, like, within miles of each other.
Yeah, you know? Within miles.
I mean,
but
Spider-Man
like,
Homecoming is very mm-hmm. Queens oriented, and this is Manhattan. But still, like,
yeah.
it does seem like you can't. Like, I don't know. Can you hand wave a building blowing up away? Like,
no.
That just feels
like blowing up and collapsing into the ground. And,
yeah, I think we all know now, based on events that have happened in reality, how buildings fall and the debris. And yeah. Let me just say this.
It was the most tidy building falling ever.
Well, it really is. And you're telling me C4 charges done by a registered nurse. Mind
mm-hmm.
you,
yeah.
We need to go ahead and say that you know, not a skilled demolitionist.
Not a skilled demolitions expert. It's done by somebody who's much better at patching things up. Yeah.
Right. So she went all up and down the building mm-hmm. with shape charges. I mean, look, yeah. I know we're really nitpicking the hell out of this, but like, it just bothered me. It's like, so what'd you do? Just get six sticks of C4 and then that was it?
No, I just don't think you can set a show in a giant shared universe without thinking... without having a universe Bible and a storyboard and writer's coordination, so this stuff makes sense. You know, my biggest complaint about Iron Fist was that we literally saw no acknowledgement of Stark Tech or Tony Stark or anything. And I was like, really? You've got two larger-than-life billionaires in New York, and they never cross paths. They're never poaching from each other.
Is that canon? Are they connected, like, in comics? I mean, I'm just curious because, frankly, I don't know.
I mean, they know of each other because it's
Marvel.
They
all cross paths at some point,
yeah.
Right?
Okay. I mean, this is the, yeah.
That's like, I mean, that's almost the kind of, like, silly thing about Marvel is where everything's in New York. It's like, you know, yeah. Like, each superhero has, like, a block, right?
Yeah. No, at know. This point, they each have, like, a subway stop that they're in, so that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's why the West...
there's a lot of them.
Yeah, it's like when they move the
X-Men... miles.
When they moved the X-Men to San Francisco, it was, like, traumatic for all of the MCU because all of a sudden they couldn't just head up to Westchester whenever they wanted.
Yeah.
But it's. I feel that if you're gonna piggyback off of this shared universe, do it right or don't do it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they're having this problem with the movies, but it's going to become more of a problem with the TV shows, especially as they expand the stable and they get into deeper seasons. Is if you've built out this shared universe with plots and subplots and lots of characters, you have to kind of plausibly maintain it, and you know, and don't just do must-see TV crossovers and. I'm beginning to lose a little patience because it doesn't feel like the writing teams. It doesn't feel like the writing teams respect the world that they're advancing.
Well, Tony, you're a big believer in. I mean, one of the things you really liked was the idea of team ups, and so mm-hmm. Let me dive deep into your brain for just a second on, you know, some of the stuff that you've read that you've enjoyed in the way of team ups. And how did those end that were, you know, obviously better?
I mean, I think to me, the team-ups are when you have, like, protagonists bouncing off each other, like, people who are used to being the hero of their own story and, like, being not a team player, and they have to be a team player, and their personalities kind of intersect in amusing ways where, you know, perhaps one's serious and one's wacky, or one's the brain and one's the brawn and what have you. And, like, the Defenders had those moments, but, like... Mm-hmm. They were so few and far between, right? Like, I love that Chinese restaurant mm-hmm. episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yes!
That was, like, the high point of the series to me. But, like, that was one episode out of eight.
And riding the subway.
Yeah, and then riding the subway, and there were little bits here and there. You know, even this episode had, like, that one kind of, it was not great, but the one little moment where, like, they're looking down the elevator shaft, and, like, you know, yeah. Matt's like, well, you know, if it had to come to it, I'm glad we're all here together. And they're like, shut up, Matt. You know, Luke is like, I'm not going to hug you. And, you know, and Jessica Jones had, like, the best lines of this episode, because she had many, in my opinion, some of the best lines of the series. You know, I love her episode, her line right in the first scene where she's like, I have not even changed my clothes since that architect like shot himself. Let's just get this over with. So I love those character moments, but there are not enough of them in this. And it's, I don't know, it's hard. I mean, this is my feeling of, you know, kind of Marvel fatigue in general. It's like, how much homework are we doing for these things, right? Like, I don't know. I have now done all the Marvel Netflix stuff. It's 65 episodes I have watched in preparation for The Defenders. And that was a lot. And some of it was good, and some of it was less than good. And yeah, I don't know. I love those character moments, but I think it is unfortunate how much of this is not character moments. It's fight, 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 and convoluted hand internal politics. Again, I don't really understand what Elektra's motivation was. I guess I don't super care what the hand's giant plan was.
It wasn't really good if it could be brought down by four randos over the course of 96 hours.
Yeah.
Which is what it basically was. I mean, I think this is one of the pleasures and the problems of doing podcasts like this, where you do watch the shows and you dissect them and all that. But what we were basically being asked to buy over the course of these eight episodes is that four total strangers over the course of 96 hours and a series of unusual coincidences managed to unravel a conspiracy that is literally thousands upon thousands of years old. They managed to dispatch at least 60% of the principals involved in this conspiracy through assorted means over the course of these 96 hours. They blow up a building, they discover the existence of dragons, and then when it's done, nobody knows what they did, nobody links it to them, and they go on their consequence-free way.
Yeah. And that's hard. I feel like they did a lot. 96 hours
against 9,600 years or whatever, collective experience, eluding authorities and not getting things done. Like, if we had seen some groundwork through other series, or even through this one, suggesting that the hand was getting sloppy and stupid, other than, like, you know, Bakuta all, Alexandra, you've made these decisions, and we've had fights before. Like, but there was nothing in there where, like, you watch the first episode, and you're like, wow, this hand is a couple thousand years old, they're gonna crumble any minute. Like, you get none of that. You just get... Yeah.
It's hard. I feel like they built the hand up so much, and then as this giant, shadowy, eternal organization that controls everything. And then, like, the more we learn about them, and, like, they have a school where they're training disciples, and they have representatives on every continent. And then, like, the more they kind of pull back the curtain, the less and less exciting. Like, they introduce characters who are part of the five deadliest ninjas in the world running the hand, who get killed, like, 2 hours after we're introduced to them.
But even the ninja minions were like automatons. Like, in Daredevil season 2, they were like, they were mystical. And then as soon as back into a corner, just bust out guns. I'm like, a minute.
Even, like, when, you know, the scene where, like, they're taking the elevator down, and, like, Matt's, and they're like, Matt, what do you hear down there? And he's like, there's 30 guys. And it's like, I think we're supposed to think that's scary because there's only three of them or four of them at that moment. But my first thought was like, this is the hand. This is the, like, shadowy eternal ninja organization that runs the world. It's like 30 guys left in a hole, and you're just going to beat them up in a hole.
Yeah. Like, and some of them have jackhammers and are doing construction.
Like, what the heck kind of secret ninja cult are you in where they're like, oh, sure, we've taught you to snap people's necks with your pinky in three well-placed moves, but we've also noticed that you're really good in a Home Depot, so
it's hard when you run a building because, like, you know, someone's still got to be the ninja janitor, right? Like, you know how to snap a net with a pinky, but we need somebody to empty the recycling bins for all the cubicles, and it's you know, seniority sucks, unless you're senior. Sorry, ninja. Also, you know what? Seniority is real rough.
I'm 700 years old. That's really young around here, Klaus.
Yeah, seniority is extra rough when everyone's immortal, let me tell you.
And I know it sounds like we're just like taking a fat steaming dump on it. But, I mean, for the most part, I enjoyed myself through the series. It's just that, like, by the end, like, there are certain things. I want things wrapped up, but I don't want you to put fights in place of good dialogue. Fights yeah. don't, like, the fight should be that's the last resort. Like, we're talking about the end of the thing, and that this is why we like superheroes to finally use their powers and fight, but not like for a bulk of it. I almost wish I had a timer and just kind of timed fights,
because there's a lot of them in this episode.
Yeah, I'm wondering what so the percentage many. Is if it's not even.
And it's hard, because I feel like, you know, I feel like I'm being pretty hard on this episode, and that it is unfortunate how weak this episode is, given that it's the finale. And, you know, some of the other Marvel Netflix shows have kind of fallen apart at the end of their series yeah. as well. Because, like, I feel like there were other great character moments throughout the series. There were other fights that I thought were really exciting throughout the series, and this episode did not really have any of those for me. You know, like, there were there was the part where, like, Luke tells Danny, like, light it up, and he lights up his fists, yep.
and then Wu-Tang Clan comes on, and that was great.
Like, that moment, like, yes, and then
I guess I was just like, I think I'm supposed to think this is cooler than I
exactly think it you is, are I guess, was the, because yeah. it has all it. Tony, there are recipes where you can add ingredients the same as me. We can do the exact same thing, but sometimes it's just the way we do it and the organization yeah. of it. You know, it's like it makes it, it cannot be by the numbers, and mm-hmm. that's what they did.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
Well, I feel like one of the things they did do right in this episode is that everybody kind of got their moment, mm-hmm. you know, because you have to light it up. You're like, oh, it's teamwork. I'm very excited about that. I loved it when Jessica rescues them with the elevator, mm-hmm. you know, and she's holding on to it. She's like, come on. And you're like, oh, wow. It was a nice moment, you know.
That was cool. And I got to see yeah. her power level again.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. And look, mm-hmm. Kristen Ritter needs to get on the workout plan. I'm just saying.
Like, I kind of like the idea. I kind of like that she's got, like, the noodle arms and can still send people.
Yeah, it's a little weird with the waifness. And I'm like, you know, like we can get her in the gym. We can get her on a little creatine and just buff her up a little bit. Like, make it slightly realistic that she's got some muscle tone.
I want to see some tricep definition.
Something. Just give me a little something there, because I know those little twig legs are not doing the job.
Mm-hmm. And that was, like, the most, because her power levels has definitely are not really defined, which I feel like is kind of in line with her character, in that, like
she's never bothered to figure out what the limits are. So.
Well, like she has abilities that she does not really care about, that she happens to have, because, like, I'm trying to think back to Jessica Jones. What were the biggest things? Like, because, like, she mainly is just, like, climbing over things, and she breaks mm-hmm. a million locks. She lifts a car up by the bumper.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But in this, like, she is literally holding a giant metal elevator with, I mean, Luke Cage is probably not exactly light either.
No.
So, so that was a pretty impressive,
That was super cool. I enjoyed
Jessica
that.
Doesn't know the limits because she doesn't care about them. And so. Yeah.
Because, like, they're not
interesting
to her.
And that's why her character needs to be pressed. Because Gal calls her the unyielding one, and I don't buy that.
Like, oh no! I think that's supposed to imply that temperament-wise and personality-wise, she's not backing down.
Yeah, but where does Gal get off knowing that?
Gal knows every. I'm pretty sure Gal has, like, a couple interns in Jerry Hogarth's office and knows what's what.
That's all right. Frank Castle's gonna put a cap in her ass.
Oh, I don't know.
I made the argument that Iron Fist would have been much more interesting if it had been the Madame Gao show, and she's like, oh god, what is this? This idiot's from Kunlun. I could be useful.
Oh yeah. She was the big bad.
Yeah, and she was amazing, and I love her in that series, and it would be truly revolutionary. Here we are, nearly 20 years into the Marvel Renaissance and Marvel genre. It would be truly revolutionary if they had any Marvel property that was headed up by somebody who was over the age of 50 and female and non-white. And just, like, the Madame Gao show would have been amazing. And
all right. I'm
weep for the lack of vision. But I'm hopeful she survived this. I'm hopeful she survived.
I mean, one thing we learned in the series is that she is the most interesting part of the hand.
Right.
Because, like, the other parts of the hand were, like, little one-sentence descriptions. Yeah. I mean, and she has personality, and she's interesting, and I don't know, just the
she's
other
so
members of the hand, they kind of phoned in.
In this episode, I think she had the most contiguous dialogue mm-hmm. in the entire series or I've ever seen. I mean, mm-hmm. literally, she was having like full-blown conversations. I was like, well, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
And well, it was, and, you know, her, and, it, and
her
it was well
to
acted.
Talk to pool has been, you know, condensed. She doesn't have yeah. as many friends anymore. So yeah. you know, let's no. talk about the way the world used to be, Danny. So
with
let's
Danny,
talk about
the
how
world
cities
used to be filled with dragons.
And yeah, and let's talk about how cities scary. Rise and fall, Elektra. Which I felt was a little. I mean, I thought that the actress did a good job delivering that. Mm-hmm. It was a little diminished because I felt like we kind of already heard this speech from Alexandra. You know, yeah. cities mm-hmm. rise and fall. You know, and if anything, it's slightly less. I don't know. There's just so much of this episode took place in like a hole in the basement. And yeah, that was not very exciting for me.
But
it's like
Gal
having
was,
a bunch
I thought
of really
Gal was
goth
scary.
Teenagers in the laundry room, just you know, talking
yeah,
about.
But yeah. Gal was super scary when mm-hmm. she was talking to Danny, and like the mm-hmm. whole like I don't know if I caught all of the gist of it, but like I got the intent with the whole. You used to hold your mother's hand, then you mm-hmm. took it, then you pulled it away because you wanted to go on your own, and now you're all alone again, and all you want to do, what would you do to hold her hand? Like, that was, like, super, like, that just had a lot of beef to it and a lot of heaviness, mm-hmm. but it was so misplaced.
So the mm-hmm. funny thing is that's a callback to an earlier episode of Iron Fist, because over the course of that series, she gets kidnapped by Danny and company. They tie her to a chair and they try to interrogate her, and she basically she's like, I spent all of the 16th century being interrogated, I can do this standing on my head. And then she gets under all of their skins, like she tells Claire, you're never gonna be special if you she's like, you keep hanging around these extraordinary people hoping that'll make you extraordinary, it'll never happen for you. And she tells Colleen she's worthless, and she's just really good at getting in people's heads. And she does it here to Danny, and I was like, ooh, that is a nice continuation of the technique you displayed back in Iron Fist, lady. And it also implies that at one point the hand was on its game enough to keep tabs on everybody. You know, I'd be kind of interested in a Defenders too if you had a wave of like B-list ninjas who realize that the five big baddies are dead, and then go, they've had detailed intelligence dossiers on everybody who matters in the world, and there's a mad scramble for the intel, and the Defenders have to get to it before these guys do. Like, that would be a great follow-up series. But yeah, no, Gao is creepy as I'll get out in this, and very immortal and ageless and working on a completely different plane, and I love it. God, do I love it.
I appreciate that she is that villain who's like, I am not pretentious. I don't need to impress you. I don't need to hunt endangered animals and butcher them in front of you to show you how tough I am. Yeah. It's like, no, I'm busy getting things done behind
the
scenes.
She can do a one-inch punch. She has done it multiple times, and it's awesome.
And she doesn't need to do it every episode to remind us how you know.
No.
She is what she does not show us, as opposed to mm-hmm. the other leaders of the hand who I just have a hard time taking seriously.
Well, she had those conversations with Alexandra where she's like, you want to live forever, we just want to get home. Yeah. And I thought that's almost more dangerous because, you know, she's on a completely different plane.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that she doesn't mind getting old, she doesn't mind being infirm, and when she thinks, she tends to think in sense. Centuries and mm-hmm. and like not a whole lot bothers her anymore, and that's menacing. That's genuinely terrifying, because most of the time when you have a villain, it's somebody who's like really touchy about something, and all you have to do is kind of go poke 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 poke, and it all falls apart.
Yeah, she's playing like 9-level chess.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So yeah, I love her, and I hope she survives. And I think we can agree that Luke Cage was basically the beating heart of the series.
He's I like Jessica dad. Jones, so, you know, she's my favorite
she's the
Defender, because, I don't know, I mean, she's sulky and sarcastic, she's the, you know, mm-hmm. Raphael is my favorite Ninja Turtle, and she's kind of the Raphael of the team, mm-hmm. so, you know, she carries a lot of water for me.
Oh, wait a minute now, hold up, you just went down a path, just...
Ninja Turtle comparisons?
Yep, so we're gonna have to Flophouse
style this. Danny is Michelangelo, that's clear, because mm-hmm. He's the young...
I don't like where you're going right now, because there's only one section I think you're going to go down for Matt Murdock, and that's going to upset me, Tony, if you say it.
Well, I think Matt Murdock and Luke Cage both think they're Leonardo, and that's the problem.
Okay,
so I don't think there's no Donatello on the Defenders, but they both think they're Leonardo, and I don't think either of them is quite Leonardo. So yeah,
gotcha. Okay,
because there's not we never get like a true leader never really emerges from the team, right? Like, because and some of it feels like because Luke and Matt are kind of jockeying for power, and some of it feels like the writers don't know what to do, right? Because sometimes Luke is kind of the moral compass, but Matt is the one who, you know, gets to self-sacrifice and makes the some of the big calls.
Yeah,
so
you have a good point.
I don't know, yeah.
And he's had most experience with the hand, obviously.
Yes, and it seems like Luke is. I mean, if there's another Defenders meetup, maybe Luke is the new leader. It sure made it look like Danny Rand might be Iron Fist, or sorry, might take on the role of Matt Murdock, with him hanging out on the rooftops looking at the red lit up building, which is that's a reference to the comics, right? There's some extended time where Matt Murdock is busy and Danny Rand has to be Daredevil. Is that, am I remembering that correctly?
Whoa. You are remembering, yeah, that okay. That is a thing that happens.
I forgot which
Danny
way it
Rand
was.
Does step in, yeah.
Are okay. You kidding me?
No, that's a thing. There's a lot of that kind of stuff. You know, people cover for each other because they're costumes.
Now, if they did Defenders 2 without Matt, I would be okay with that. But Danny cannot be Daredevil in that scenario. He can only be my Iron Fist, and that's what I decree. And I won't have it any other way. But but if they added somebody else into the mix as the fourth player, I think that could be very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that could be. Especially, what if that's Misty Knight with a
robot? Oh, how about it?
And how about it? You know, and a samurai sword. That's a famous comics cover, right?
I want to have a shiny revolver.
You know, the taking on different roles thing is it's a little weird in the Netflix setting, because like it seems like in the comic setting, the superheroes are more like prominent, and so like it's important that there not be like that there be continuity of capes, you know. So Daredevil can't disappear; that would be bad for Hell's Kitchen. You know, the criminals would pick up on that and step in. So like it's important that Iron Fist wear the Daredevil cowl and have his presence known. But in the Marvel world, I don't know how much it matters, because it seems like maybe they're less prominent, right? Like there's not headlines every week about Daredevil and Spider-Man.
Yeah. And was it a cheat that Matt whispered into Danny's ear? I think that was a cheat.
But then we get told what it was later. Yeah. So that was again I was
take
like
take care of my city. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, is that a thing where like I thought if we didn't hear what that was, that would be mysterious.
Yes.
But like we hear what it is like 5 minutes later.
Is this, The Flash?
That's fresh wounds there, Mose.
You know, very
still
fresh.
Recovering.
Troll.
I've been condemned to the Speed Force forever. Did I say forever? I meant for like 12 minutes.
Right. Yes. And now I'm going to come back in beautiful mind my way through my cell with a fly beard.
Yeah.
Can I have the room, please?
It was just, it just kind of felt like. Like they didn't want to do anything too significant because they don't know where the next series are going. So like they do these kind of non-committal things, right?
You know, either you take a page from comic publishers and do series and events that are understood not to be tied into continuity. Like, what if we send the Avengers back to merry old England? Or
if the Avengers had beards?
Yeah.
I believe that's an actual thing.
Jean Grey was.
What if the Justice League was turned into gorillas? That's part of continuity. So. Yeah.
But you know, so you'd have these things like what if it's 1602 and the X-Men go on a ship? Actual thing that has gone out with Marvel, very well received. Or they did like an X-Men noir series one time where it was a noir based universe, and of course like Wolverine is a low life for rent and things like that. My point is if you're going to do these team ups and you're going to have these comic book characters, then maybe treat them like comic book characters, where it's like we have this stable of archetypes, we're going to throw them into a new setting because part of the fun is extrapolating what happens. Either that, or you coordinate across all of the writers. You have a whiteboard that genuinely looks lunacy from the outside, and you figure out how each event reverberates across all of the related properties.
I totally agree with what you're saying, because I was just thinking the same thing. It's like they spend so much time. Now, granted, there's a lot more money involved, a lot more stakes for the MCU.
Yeah.
But why can't the MTU do the same thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I have only read a certain number of events, because some of the big crossover events just feel like a cash grab more than anything.
Oh, God, yeah.
But, you know, but some of the big ones at least have, like, a high premise, right? So, like, you know, the original Civil War, Basically, you know, it is agreed that, like, secret identities are no more. Every hero has to register with the government. And then you get to put in every single comic, like, how does the title character of that comic react to that thing, right? And some of them go along with it, and some of them are not. It then eventually kind of ends up being like, I really, you know, a story that kind of feels like it's built around, we really want to see Captain America and Punisher fight, and then Spider-Man and whoever, and Iron Man fight, and and so on and so on. But there is the initial premise there of like, this is this big world-changing thing, and how does everybody react in their own little way?
Yeah, and now that's like Civil War. The underlying premise is really kind of deeply stupid, but the way they play it out is very interesting. And like you said, you get to see all different types of people fight, and you get some character development. Like, people are legitimately horrified by Robot Thor over the course of the comic Civil War, because they're like, "You've made robot clones of your friends? What the what?" Or people are on Steve's side with, "Look, this is a civil rights issue," and you know, when people find out who we are, it hurts the people we love. And, like, it was a fun series to read. Again, doesn't hold up, and you stop and think about it too closely, it makes no sense, but fun and interesting. This could have been the same thing, and there are just so many questions that you can't shut off your brain while watching. It's hard to just enjoy it as good, stupid fun, or exciting, all of my favorite toys are finally in the same toy box fun. Like, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it had its moments. And you know, I mean, I think back the first Avengers movie, which, you know, you got to see after watching how many lead-in movies to that. There were things about that were at least like a big spectacle. But it kind of fell down on other in terms of making you care about characters, and it sometimes felt like just a series of action set pieces. I thought the action set pieces were, you know, obviously it's movie budgets, they're a little bit more exciting than what we got here today. But,
the problem I have with the Avengers, it's Lisa complains about MCU Day, evidently. No, the problem I have with the Avengers movies is there are too many really obviously set up shots where it's supposed to look very iconic and comic-like.
Yes, like, sure. Like the splash page shots, yes.
Like, and that's first, okay in the with first me. Avenger, I really, really hate that shot where they're in a circle with their backs to each other facing out.
Oh, yeah,
and then
the
Avengers theme swells, and you're supposed to be inspired that they've all come together to fight this alien wave, and it's just dumb and makes no sense from a tactical perspective, and then they repeat it only with like robots in Avengers Age of Ultron, and that is the one where the post credits they have this giant alabaster-esque statue of all the Avengers like in this big fighting pile where they're all facing out and fighting invisible forces, and it's just like, we've lost the script.
Yeah, you know what? Here's the thing. I have some, I think, some definition around that. I think we've all become a bit older. And I think there's an element of you've lived in enough years that you get jaded. And everything, it's never as shiny. The kids' music is never as good. And I'm totally with you. Like, I can see that moment with the Avengers, and I remember it clear as day, but it sticks with you. And I can see the cheese of it and just the gloss. And there's an element where I'm just like, I get it. But I also get it in the way I'm just like, okay, I see where they're going. And I know my kids really like that.
Yeah, it's going to be a different set of eyes.
I saw it with different eyes. And when you see it with different eyes, you know, it's like, I hate to say it, but it's like, you know, older people collecting toys. I used to do it, and I grew out of it.
This is where people start rage on unsupporting the incomparable.
I'm removing
all of my support
and
from
that's
the TV
fine.
Podcast.
I'm going to be going into retirement soon enough.
Just going to put this Lego I was holding back on the shelf.
Yeah, just do
you
that.
Know, but I have a really nice
I'm not
Sunday
saying
night
that there's
that
anything
that
wrong with
that.
I'm just
daughter.
Saying that there is an element that we, you know, look, I do the same thing. I love Dee Dee, and I don't like when certain things happen, and it makes me a little irate, and I feel the 15, the 12-year-old in me, oh, that would never happen, well, actually. And as soon as I give myself that, well, actually, I'm just like, put yourself in check. Put yourself in the shape of yourself then and watching with new eyes. I'm not saying, I'm certainly not going to say, I don't like to waste time on mundane things and mediocre. And this, yeah, it had high points, but you know,
it's hard when you can see the seams. Right?
Yes,
you know, and I feel like that again. The scene where Danny lights up his fist and Wu-Tang starts playing,
right?
Like, that could have been cool if something exciting happened then, and like. Like, it was like, there is a music cue to let us know that this is exciting, even though nothing exciting is happening in this fight that wasn't happening
if I saw Danny Rand
whipping, kind of a Pavlovian response to that
just
song.
Just completely like, whipping ass with that fist at some point before, and it would be like, oh yeah, here it comes.
Like, you wanted, because it's just him doing more kung fu, right?
Yeah,
like, it's not like... He's whipping through guys. It's not like the camera's going all crazy angles. It's not like, you know, he's taking down the foundations of the building. It's just more kung fu, but now it's got Wu-Tang behind it.
Can I tell you what it looks like?
As all good kung fu should, I hasten to add.
But, it's kind of a waste. It's kind of a waste of Wu-Tang.
There, it is. There is an episode of In Living Color where Jim Carrey, at the end of the episode, like, plays this kind of monstrous guy, and he just has his hand out in his fist, and he's just kind of like... lethargically moving around and just hitting people and they're falling over. That's exactly the, as soon as I saw that, that's what I thought it was. You can go to YouTube and see if you can find it. I'm not going to put the link up because I'm not going to do it, but there, I mean, it was just, there was no emotion behind it. Like, it just, it, that could have been so friggin' raw and powerful.
And, but nope.
Nope.
But nope.
Sorry.
Just phoned in. Yeah. It's hard, you know, and I think, Lisa, you got to the idea, like, they wanted to have all these character moments, and we had a lot of them, and in this, like, every secondary character gets more than one scene in this, and it ends up feeling like an episode that's, like, checking boxes more than doing anything. And, like, they check all the boxes, everybody gets their scenes, and, you know, everybody gets a moment, but, like, in the rush to include all the moments, they forget to make any of them matter to us. So, you know.
Wide shot.
I feel like I'm getting meaner the more I talk. So,
no, yeah, let's. You know what the point to the incomparable, or rather the point to the TV, is we're supposed to also talk about the stuff we enjoy. And yeah. we very much enjoyed the Chinese episode, the Chinese restaurant episode. I should say.
I should watch that three more times.
It was really joyful.
Okay. Yeah.
And we really liked, I really liked Madame Gao, so anytime she was on the screen, I was delighted by her. There is a certain grim pleasure in watching Bakudo finally get what's coming to him.
Right.
Yes, he was basically like a Reddit poster brought to life with kung fu, you know, with I'm going to gaslight you, and then post on a forum where I talk about the red pill, and just, So yeah, that was Bakudo's comeuppance. My only regret is that the dude who spent all of his time hunting endangered species could not have been thrown into a PETA meeting with a pelt tied around his waist and left to their tender mercies.
I think he fell off that elevator. He was crippled.
Yeah, he landed on rebar, so he was impaled.
Oh, I couldn't even see that. Tony, good eyes.
Mostly
he was
good.
That was the last scene with him and Madame Gao.
Yeah,
she's
okay. I didn't even notice it, and I've watched it three times.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, this is the thing, is I watched this finale three times and there are still big parts that just slid off the brain pan each time. And that's not good.
Hey, you want to know what the best part of the whole thing was of this episode? Is when Frank Castle smashes at the end and opens up the ground.
Sorry, Mose.
No, that was the best part. And that's the thing I'm looking forward to, because that guy doesn't deal in any of this menagerie. It's all black and white. There's no gray. He does what he's supposed to do.
He shoots people.
He's a wanton man of destruction. He knows what
he
wants to do, and he knows how to do it. He gets it done.
Okay. I have different feelings about the Punisher. I think he's dumb.
He's fantastic.
I'm not holding back, people. It's late.
Yeah.
Good.
There's no filter now.
That's what they
now.
Pay for.
Yeah.
There's no filter. I'm on Team Batman. Team Batman doesn't like guns.
Dude, so. Punisher would rip Batman's stuff apart.
They're in different universes, so they're both safe from
That's
each
good.
Other.
And speaking of which, now this is interesting. Talk about Marvel and DC on competition levels. Justice League is coming out the same day Punisher is.
Oh, okay, but movies versus TV, so yeah. they're okay. I am not.
I know
see
what I'm going to see.
Justice League movie. So
both of them, because there are 24 hours in a day, and we're adults with vacation days.
No, I'm not going to see Justice League.
I will wait and see Justice League at home. So, like a sucker. Like, well, the sucker I am.
Yeah, it's I can't bring myself to care about Justice League in the theater. I'm sorry. I really like the art because it's very Alex Ross inspired. And they've done a great job with the art.
I just,
and every preview looks joyless. Every preview
I know.
Looks awful.
That shot they keep showing where Aquaman is on the Batmobile, and I'm like, Aquaman doesn't want to be on the Batmobile.
He goes through the building and just, like, zips right out the front door.
Maybe he's like those seals that you find on police cruisers every once in a while, where the police officer's like, well, now I have to call Animal Rescue to get this thing back to the ocean. Oy.
You know? Cyborg looks dopey. Yeah. I wish there was a Flash movie before this, so I would at least care.
I don't get why they included Cyborg.
Do you really want to know? But I won't tell you. But you know what I'm going to say. But
I mean, Cyborg is pretty representative of, like, I think where the Justice League in the comics right now.
Yeah.
But it does feel like, I mean, basically it's because, like, they did Green Lantern and that name is poisoned for a while. you gotta let the Green Lantern Earth lie.
Because they really should have just done John Stewart. Like, that would have been amazing if they had John Stewart. It would have actually scoured the Ryan Reynolds memory from everyone.
I don't know. I don't care about Cyborg as a DC Comics character, but I have also not read much with Cyborg. Again, it's like, you know, why him? Why not Martian Manhunter? I mean, even if it's like we want to have a person of color, why not Martian Manhunter played by a person of color? Why not John Stewart from the Green Lantern? You know, I mean, there's a variety of other characters you could have used for that I guess I would be more interested in than
Cyborg.
Yeah. I really like John Stewart in the Justice League. He's great.
Exactly. Who is this guy? That character and replace
him.
He's
one of the Green Lanterns. He's a Marine.
Ex-Marine who's an architect. So he's like excruciatingly type A, and he's incredibly principled. And unlike Kyle, who's a head case, and Hal, who is constantly faffing off to Quadrants Unknown.
Because you have
John sticks to the job.
Yeah, John is like, I'm a Marine, I'm getting the job done, as opposed to, like, I'm a test pilot, and nobody can hold me back, one of them's like an illustrator, right,
who does the most, Kyle.
Yeah, he does the kind of the most crazy things with the ring power, which I think was really cool for the art for the time. Yeah.
Because in my head, you keep saying John Stewart, and I'm thinking from The Daily Show, and that would be funnier, so that would be great.
Well,
like, I would go for that. He's just, like, real snarky. Like,
that's Batman,
how
would, really be, like, Batman that, would be like,
what I'd
please
really
don't
like
touch
is a
that.
Justice League that is comprised entirely of current and former Daily Show correspondents.
So you could have Elliot Kalin at that point. Even Dan McCoy. I mean, they could all be in there.
Well, I'm thinking you'd probably have Samantha Bee as Wonder Woman. You know, you'd have, let's see, Stephen Colbert, obviously. Is Stephen Colbert your Superman or your Batman? This is a very important
question.
He's
your Batman.
Yeah.
Was his name Rob Riggle? They had like a really big guy who was like a former military guy.
That's Rob Riggle.
I think his persona is kind of a big stupid guy, right? So I think he's your Superman.
I was going to say Captain Marvel.
He's a little bit more Captain Marvel. Because I don't know who your Superman is.
Wow, we have derailed right now.
No, people love this.
Yeah.
Stephen
Carell is your Superman.
Okay, yes, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Steve Carell is your Superman. And I feel like your Wonder Woman is probably Sam B. Although I kind of like the idea of Liz Winstead as Power Girl.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what about Last Week Tonight with Oliver? Where does he do?
Yeah. He's obviously Captain Britain.
Yeah, he's obviously Captain Britain.
Oh, I'm triggered right there. That's just racist.
Oh, wait, I'm just crossed back over again to Marvel.
Yeah, I thought you guys were progressive.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah.
Nope, sorry. There's only one British superhero.
That is actually pretty sad when you think about it. And this is something we're going to have to ask our British members of the Incomparable is why do you not have more men in tights who run around?
They are some.
And I expect their answer is going to be because of the Tudor era. But
well, they had Red Riding Hood.
There's some other ones in the DC universe, but they're just, I mean, it's kind of like, look at your Canadian superheroes, and it's like
Alpha Flight would be awesome.
Alpha Flight is, look, we're not on this podcast to argue about Alpha Flight.
Obviously, Kids in the Hall are Alpha Flight. Ensembles to superhero team-ups.
I haven't heard any incomparable discussing Alpha Flight ever.
I love that there's just a Sasquatch, and he's just a Sasquatch. And
damn
it's
right.
Like, we don't,
that guy Puck is awesome. And then when he had the armor, it was awesome. That's fantastic.
We're doing a lot of important work here, people.
I feel like SNL maps pretty much to the X-Men at this point, because there's just infinite numbers of SNL cast members. There are infinite numbers of X-Men. We can. Also, I want to see Kate McKinnon play Professor Gray Xavier at this point.
Yeah. This is important work.
I mean, the thing is, Guy English, he doesn't even bring up Alpha Flight. That's how much of a race traitor he is.
Well, it's implied by his Canadian.
No.
Every time he says a boot, just that means that's short for Alpha Flight.
Okay. All right, gotcha. Now I'm with you.
I'm so sorry if you tuned in to listen to people talk about the Defenders.
Well, we're giving them an extra little bonus. You know,
this episode will never air. It'll be fine.
Yeah. So. No, I feel like this is pretty much going to lead off the whole thing. All right. So, have we finished talking about the Defenders, or are we done with that?
Yeah, I think we've been done for a while.
All right. I mean, we've gone down to just, you know, beyond Third Railville.
That's where we live. The property's cheap there.
Okay, there we go. So what I'd like to do is thank everybody who listened to our DefendoCast, and it's 9 episodes instead of it's 10 episodes. I like to think that 9 episodes divides evenly into 3, so here we go. Mm-hmm. And we are open on Twitter or the members-only Slack to suggestions for what the team should tackle next. If you want to make a case... Oh my God. You know what? What I'm worried is if we just unilaterally agree to the Punisher, it'll be like the time we all thought, hey, it might be kind of good if we did the Bastard Executioner. And then I forget which one of us had the moment of sanity who was like, maybe we should watch it first before we promise anything. So,
we're as smart as one person. It's really powerful.
If the Incomparable does not do the Punisher, I will do it solo by myself in my own little, way.
Mose, be the Punisher you want to see in the world.
I want to see more Punishers.
But don't get caught. That's my legal advice to you.
He's got microchip. He's not going to get caught.
All right. Okay.
Wait, I thought the whole point of being microchipped is that you could be found in
Microchip is a character.
Yeah, be careful.
You've just learned something about the Punisher you didn't want to know. Congratulations.
You're right,
Punisher War Journal coming live to you.
No, I thought you're chipping them like you chip cats at the vets? What's going on?
Stop
superheroes now have chips in the back of their necks, so you can take them to veterinary offices and scan to
watch.
See who they belong to.
You obviously are not familiar with the events of Civil War 7.
Yeah.
So,
Hashtag masculinity. How about that?
Okay.
You want that?
All right, to get back to winding down this podcast for everybody. Please let us know.
When superheroes are outlawed, only outlaws will have superheroes, Lisa. So
I'm going to go down to my SPCA and adopt a superhero now, and we're going to wrap up this podcast. We are taking suggestions for the next TV series we're going to tackle. I promise to give the Punisher series on Netflix a fair shake before committing yay or nay to it. And I was, throughout this, Lisa Schmeiser. I want to give a shout out to Nathan Alderman, who ably filled on a couple of episodes and forced us to look at the TV show like thoughtful and mature people. It was horrible. It might never happen again. Well, Nathan was actually a very incisive and delightful contributor. I'd like to see him again.
Yeah, people got a good taste. They didn't have me.
And but we did. We had Phil Moslek and we had Tony Sindelar on the DefendoCast. And wrapping it up, again, Lisa Schmeiser. Thanks for listening.
Be good. Goodbye, nerds. Woo.
I'm going to spend the rest of the night mapping the X-Men to SNL cast members, you know.
This is, you got to get the string out and draw a chart.
Oh my God, I do.
My gosh.
Oh, Lorne Michaels is obviously
full hour on that
Magneto.
One.
Yeah.
That was, full.
Timeline, it was an hour of time.
I didn't even bring up Thor because I was like, not everyone has seen Thor probably, but